Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest today is this evening, Dr. Russell Blaylock, and he puts out the Blaylock newsletter, but we've been talking something about the Obama healthcare bill. We're talking about this idea of nullification. What is so difficult for people to believe is there really are people who want to regulate every aspect of our lives. PG&E is actually installing smart meters here in this area. This will allow them to monitor electronically how much electricity you use at any point of the day. Certainly, they will know whether you're there or not. Certainly, if you're not using electricity, they will know that you're there, not there. And so if anybody wanted to break into your house, what a wonderful time, because no one's using electricity. They will know certainly how much electricity you use at every point of the day. Of course, part of this is designed to raise your electric bills. PG&E denies that, but there's a real plan to raise your electric bills, to get it so high that you will not use electricity, you will not use your dryer, you will not certainly wash your clothes as frequently, take as many baths or showers. They want to regulate every aspect of our lives, and people don't understand that this is very real. People are upset because there's something a little intrusive about them knowing how much electricity you use at any time of the day. But of course, this is being installed here over the objections of the people, but you have to understand these people don't care what the American people want. PG&E is part of what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness, this elite group who wants to control every aspect of our lives. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY 464-8295. If you'd like to talk to Russell Blaylock, and we were going to talk a little bit about nullification. Can the states, is it possible that the states would have the courage to say to the federal government, we're not going to take your money, we're going to do what we were elected by the people to do, we're going to represent the people, and we're not simply going to allow you to tell us how to control the people? You see, basically the federal government says, well, we have this money and we'll give it to you if you do that. The federal government has no money. They take it by us by force, and then they use that money to violate these concepts of states' rights and state sovereignty, and they bribe people, and they certainly put money out to get people elected in the state legislature. But what we really need to do is to take America back. If it's going to be taken back, people listening to this audience have to get involved. They're going to have to get involved. We're taking America back block by block and precinct by precinct, city by city, county by county, state by state. We cannot take it back from above, because they can put up enough money to buy any one of our senators or any one of our congressmen, and they, believe me, most of them are for sale. But Russell, you pick up the story. How can we get this concept of nullification, people to understand it, that if we don't take back certainly the right to regulate what happens in our own communities, if we allow all power to be transferred to Washington, D.C., then freedom as we've known it will soon become simply a remembrance of things past.
Well, that's exactly true. And what we see is that founding father recognized this almost immediately after the ratification of the Constitution, that if you left government to itself, it's gradually going to erode all the powers of the state. It's going to dissolve the state and take over everything. I'll read you what Madison wrote in Federalist 41. He said, if Congress can employ money indefinitely to the general welfare, and are the sole supreme judges of the general welfare, they may take the care of religion into their own hands, they may appoint teachers in every state, county, and parish, and pay them out of the public treasury. They may take into their own hands the education of children, establishing in like manner schools throughout the Union. They may assume the provision of the poor, they may undertake regulation of all roads and post roads. In short, everything from the highest object of state legislation down to the most minute object of police would be thrown under the power of Congress.
Sounds just about what's going on today, where we have, you know, the Federal Education Department, you know, the rewarding schools when they teach the children to go along with the international agenda. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Russell Blaylock right here at Radio Liberty. Russell, you go right ahead.
Well, that section of Federalist 41 I read from Madison was in 1792. So we see from the very beginning they were plotting to take away all of the states' right and make the central government absolutely powerful. Now, we had fought a war with England to free ourselves. We established independent states, and it went through a very difficult ratification process for all the states even agreed to sign on to this Constitution and a national and a federal government. Well, very quickly, they tried to dissolve the states and say, well, now there's no more states. Well, as Madison points out, it's written very plainly in the Constitution, we retain our powers. We only give the federal government powers that the states decide to give to the federal government. All other powers we retain for ourselves. Well, this is a battle. This idea of states' rights has been a battle from the very beginning of the ratification. It's never ended. And likewise, the nullification battle has never ended from the very beginning, because actually the first references to nullification began long before the debate that led up to the Civil War. It began with tariff debates. Jefferson, and the Alien Sedition Act. This was what the Virginia and Kentucky Resolution was about, was nullification of the Sedition Act primarily. That the government was beyond any criticism, and that anyone who criticized the federal government, any of its members or any member of Congress in any way, could be arrested and imprisoned for 2 years and fined $2,000. So we say very early in the formation of our republic, here comes a law that is plainly and clearly unconstitutional, and the response was, well, the states will nullify it. We just refuse to do it. Well, later, under Andrew Jackson, when we saw there's a battle over the tariff, and the state of South Carolina said, well, we're not going to collect the tariff of the federal government because it's unconstitutional. And so they nullified it. Well, Andrew Jackson's response was the force bill, in which he said, well, we'll send federal troops in and make you collect it. Well, South Carolina's response was, well, we'll train our militia and we'll stop you at the border.
Well, this is Dr. Stan Russell's talking about, certainly it was under Andrew Jackson, where they had a tariff, and why the people of North Carolina said they weren't going to actually collect the tariff, and Andrew Jackson said, well, we'll send troops in to enforce it. So then what happened?
So the state of South Carolina activated its militia and trained its militia and said to Andrew Jackson, we'll meet you at the border, and we'll fight you. We're not going to let you into our state, and we're not going to collect it. It's unconstitutional. Well, very quickly, the Congress saw that this was going to be a major problem, and they didn't want a war between the U.S. government and the state of South Carolina. Now, you have to realize most of the nation up north disagreed with nullification and thought it was treason. And they thought South Carolina was being treasonous by activating its militia and resisting the federal intrusion. Well, it's interesting, just a very short time later, it was the northern states who were using nullification, and suddenly they came around and said, well, the South was right. If we don't stop the federal government, nothing's going to stop them, and they're going to take over all of our rights. So when it was their ox being gored, then suddenly they saw the wisdom of nullification. So
it's interesting, Russell, that, when the Civil War came, the American people don't know that there were draft riots in the North. The Americans, the Northerners, didn't want to fight the Southerners. They killed 2,000 Americans who were draft resistors in the draft riots at that time. We never teach that, of course, in our schools. We taught the Civil War was about slavery. Had nothing to do do with slavery. They didn't pass the Emancipation Proclamation until, I think it was 82 or 83. I mean, it was just, they had to have a justification for killing all those people.
And so the Emancipation Proclamation was a war tactic.
Sure.
Lincoln was losing the war. They had not won a battle with the South, and he knew that he was losing the support of the people in the North. And so he made this Emancipation Proclamation hoping that the black slaves would riot and take up guns, and then the Southern Army would be so busy trying to defend itself, then the Northern Army could come in and defeat them. Well, it didn't work.
Well, of course, the Emancipation Proclamation freed the slaves in the South, where, of course, Lincoln couldn't free them,
right,
because he had no
right.
authority. But it didn't free the slaves in the North, where he could have freed them. It was all, ladies and gentlemen, part of the propaganda of that time. We've got Mario calling from Flint, Michigan. Mario, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do. I remember a couple years ago hearing stories that there was a school district, wait, I don't remember what state or what city, where they told the parents before the school year started that they wanted to vaccinate every child, but I don't remember this either, whether it was for H1N1 or what it was, but each student would be vaccinated before they could start the school year at that school. And all the parents, by and large, the parents rebelled and wouldn't stand for their children being forced to have a vaccination, and so they had to back down on
it. That's the thing, Mario. If people stand up, they will back down. They did the same thing with the health care workers in the state of New York. Do you have any comment at all on what Mario is saying? Because, Russell, in many ways, this is what it's really all about. The people, the elite, get by with what they're doing by fraud. Let's get Russell's remarks. What are your thoughts, Russell?
Well, I think the case he's referring to occurred in Maryland. And what happened was that the court in Maryland ruled that the children starting high school had to have all their vaccinations at once, and if the parents didn't do it, they would be fined this huge fine. So the children, I forgot how many hundreds of children, were brought into the courtroom, forcibly vaccinated with some 15, 17 vaccines in one day, which is atrocious. I wrote a letter to the editor to a paper in Maryland, and I said that the governor of Maryland should be prosecuted for a crime, and he should have to say whether or not his children have been vaccinated. Well, the press asked him that, and he refused to answer. He said, that's my private business. Well, he didn't think it was the private business of those families whose children were assaulted in a courtroom. Well, that's a perfect case of where we should have had nullification. And jury nullification was a principle from the very beginning of the founding of this country, and even before the country was founded, was that if a jury felt like the court and the prosecutor were prosecuting a law that was unfair, they could vote not guilty no matter what the facts showed. Well, the modern example of that on the negative side of jury nullification was the Simpson trial, in which the jury just said, we don't care what the facts are, whether he's guilty or not, we're going to vote not guilty. Well, we can use that as well to defend people against abuses in IRS court and against abuses in cases of the FBI and invasion of doctor's offices and alternative medicine offices and supplement companies, and in cases like this vaccine court, where the jury just said, well, I don't care what the facts are, I vote no. And that is your right. No matter what the judge directs the jury to do, he cannot direct the jury to vote a certain way. So the jury, no matter what, can say, no, I'm voting not guilty.
Okay, fine. Thanks very much, Mario. And certainly I think that the idea of we've got to be able to nullify and the people have got to be willing to take a stand. And, well, if you take a stand, you could be criticized. You might even be demonized by the local media. You might even get arrested. Well, ladies and gentlemen, an awful lot of people have died for freedom. What sacrifice are you willing to make for freedom? Because if there are not enough people who care about freedom, then we're going to lose it. Go right ahead, Russell.
Well, you know, and that's always struck me. You know, when I look at the fate of POWs, the suffering they went through, when I see soldiers and when I used to work at the VA who was terribly injured and lost limbs and blind, I think all of these people have sacrificed so much for the principle of freedom and to protect this country. And then I'll talk to a person out there and say, well, I agree with you, but, you know, I have to worry about my business and I don't want to lose my invitation to social function if I speak out for that. And I think, what a contrast that here these young men are losing their lives and their limbs and being grievously injured, and then this guy is worried about his social standing. So he won't defend freedom under any conditions, and every sacrifice is too great a sacrifice. And you think you should be ashamed of yourself. But this is what we've seen throughout history. I mean, look how many people fought for American independence. Well, it wasn't but 10% of the people did all the fighting. 90% reaped the benefit. But they weren't willing to sacrifice anything. Well, it's always that way. In every battle, it seems to be fought for principle. And nowadays, you know, our youth have been so brainwash is that you're laughed at if you're willing to fight for a principle. What kind of idiot would fight for a principle? You fight for money. You fight for some kind of advantage, power. But who but an idiot would fight for a principle? I remember reading that in one of the books I have on the Civil War, is that some of the people from above the Mason-Dixon line in Congress were shocked that the Southerners would fight for a principle. Who fights for a principle? And that's where we've come today, is that we're just not willing. Nothing is worth fighting for if it requires any kind of sacrifice whatsoever or any risk. Well, of course you're going to be attacked in the media. You're going to be attacked by these people viciously. We've seen that time and time again. I mean, look at Sarah Palin, the way she's been just viciously attacked, a horrible personal thing. But that's the type of people we're dealing with. They're not gentlemen. They're not ladies. They're vicious. And you know, one of the old sayings that I always quote is that if you can't answer a man's arguments, all is not lost. You can still call him vile names. And that's the principle they live by.
Well, I Winston Churchill, unfortunately, was not quite the man I wish he was, but he had a wonderful way with words. One of the things he said that I've always remembered, still, if you will not fight for the right, when you can easily win without bloodshed, when you will not fight when your victory will be sure and not too costly, you will come to the moment when you'll have to fight with all odds against you and only a perilous chance of survival, or there may be a worse case. You may have to fight when there is no hope for victory, for it would be better to perish than to live as slaves. And I wish that they were teaching that in our schools today. They were giving people the idea that there are things that are worthwhile fighting for, there were things that are worthwhile dying for. The thing is that, of course, we have right on our side. There is a subversive element in this society. The people who work within the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission and the Bilderbergers in this country have a subversive agenda. They have great wealth behind them. They have the power of the banking industry and the foundations behind them. And they certainly control the military and police. But they are subversive, and their purpose, they've sworn to uphold our Constitution, many of them working within government, and they're doing everything they can to destroy that. And we need to get people to understand that there is a subversive element that controls our nation. It's an invisible government. How are we going to do that, Russell?
Well, it's going to be very difficult, and it's going to require a lot of sacrifice for a lot of people.
Well, you hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment. We're going to go to Bruce, who's calling from Spokane here, and we'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Russell Blaylock talking about nullification, what's really worthwhile fighting for? Is there anything worthwhile fighting for or dying for today? Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess Russell Blaylock, and we have Bruce calling from Spokane. Hi, Bruce, do you have a question?
Yes, I do. I'd like to ask Dr. Blaylock a few things about schooling and what he talked about earlier in the earlier hour about the changing and the control of the mind of the youth of their nation.
Go right ahead.
All right. I'd like, perhaps several of you, I've been to church for many a decade and are used to be in church for many a decade before I saw what I considered a futility of the teaching methods of the church and the influence they had both on the congregation and the local community. I'll give you an example.
Oh, no, do you have a question? Because we really have
I do. Well,
involved Dr. Blaylock in
The schools are taking the children of the parishioners and remolding their mind, and the teachers and some of these people are bragging that they will own the minds of the children of the church, and the church will be to no effect.
All right, Bruce, pardon me, Russell, certainly would you agree that this is really what's happened as far as our young people are concerned, that we can certainly teach them for a few minutes every week in Sunday school about the authenticity of the scriptures, but certainly the schools will destroy their belief in the Bible. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think there's been a real concerted effort in that direction for a long time. I mean, what you see is an instilling of the worship of science. You know, our young people have been convinced that if science doesn't have the answer, then we just wait until it provides us with an answer, but no one else has an answer. No one else should be approached for the answer. Well, that excludes religion. And they've spent a lot of effort convincing our youth that religion is superstition. It had a function in the past to control people and to control or to provide answers before science arrived. But now that science is here, science is where you go when you want to have something answered. And that everything in the Bible, these miracles and all these things, could be described and answered scientifically. Well, that's taken all of the scriptural message out because they say, well, Jesus was a nice guy, but he couldn't have been resurrected from the dead because science teaches that dead stays dead and that there's no such place as heaven. People don't die and there's no soul and it doesn't go to heaven because science can't demonstrate it. And there's no punishment because science and philosophy together has decided that there's no such thing as right and objective truth. That all these things are subjective, that even our minds and our wills aren't real, that in fact all of it is just electrochemical reactions and we have no free will. Well, the youth have been convinced of that to a large degree. It's amazing to me how easy it was for them to mold their minds into believing that. And a lot of the media preaches this message that religion is not only false, but it's dangerous because it takes people away from science and the surety of science.
Hold that thought, Russell. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan and Russell simply talking about the conflict between science and religion, and they say, you know, everything has been proven scientifically, and we know the world is so many billions of years old, and the dinosaurs died off 50 to 100 million years ago, and this has been proven by science. And, of course, science requires that you can actually demonstrate this once, and then you can demonstrate it again. Well, who can demonstrate how long the dinosaurs have been dead, you know? Was anybody around to see them? How could we be absolutely certain that this isn't simply conjecture? But they have used science and this science to undermine belief in the Bible, and yet so much of the science is totally fraudulent. When I went to college, they had the missing link. I mean, they knew the missing link. It had been demonstrated scientifically with the Piltdown man, and this was certainly, it looked like the skull of a man and the jaw of an ape, and that's exactly what it was. And for 50 years, all these smart scientists accepted this until somebody noted that they'd dyed the jaw and they'd filed down the teeth, and it was all a lie. How many other lies have the scientists accepted? They should all certainly, I think, resign and go back to school again. Bruce, do you have any other question for our guest?
Well, yes. He spoke earlier of the actual changing of the thinking process in the mind, the reasoning, the accountability level. All these things have changed since the public school has taken away the education of students. Now, for example, we have a church in this area, an incredibly large church. It takes over a half a city block. At one time, when they built it, it cost $8.5 million to build. And on Sunday morning, the parking lot's fairly full. But when you pass by there the rest of the week, there's hardly a car in the lot. What that means is that's an underutilized building, and they should have the parishioners' children going to school there. That is a massive waste of resources. And if they really care about their children, they should be taught differently.
You're absolutely right, and thanks very much, Bruce. And certainly, how would you respond to that? Certainly, don't you think that churches bear part of the responsibility, Russell, for where we are today, that they have not insisted on? And the Christian children going to Christian churches, at least traditionally the Catholic children went to Catholic churches, Catholic schools, even though that they're backing away from that responsibility. But certainly, so many of our Christian churches simply say, well, we don't have to worry about what they're being taught in the schools, and they do not speak out against what's going on in the schools, and they refuse to use their facilities and their wealth to take the response for the children who are the future of this nation. What are your thoughts?
Well, one of the things that struck me looking at the whole religious experience in America and how it's changed is that I see a lot of religious leaders who are almost embarrassed to say they believe in the resurrection, or embarrassed to say they believe in judgment and heaven and hell and the spirit. They say, they start hedging their terms when they're on the television or being interviewed or in a science forum. Oh, well, this is not literal. I don't actually believe there's a heaven and hell, and I don't actually believe that Jesus was resurrected and that he was the Son of God. You see a lot of them feeling a sense of embarrassment because of the enormous power of science in the modern world. It's almost a priesthood and has replaced religion. When I studied the history of science, it used to be agreed amongst the scientists, this is in the 1800s and such, in the 1900s, was that science could only answer a very small number of questions. It only could examine things that were reproducible on a regular basis. Everything else was a mystery. And it admitted that most of what occurred in the universe was a mystery and beyond science to know anything about. And therefore, that was relegated to philosophy and to religion. What we've seen our science ironically do is it's confirmed these religious beliefs, because I spent a lot of time reading physics, and basically what physics says is that there's no matter, everything's energy, and then you ask them, well, what is energy? Where's nothing? And when it stops moving, it disappears, and it's not there. Well, then you read the Bible, and it says all things are made by God's word and are made from nothing. So it took physics all of these centuries to come to the same conclusion that was in the Bible from the very beginning, that everything is made from the Word of God. So a lot of what physics is doing is confirming the truth of Scripture, but unfortunately, our young people are not paying attention.
And of course, many of the scientists have, they're actively involved on the other side. They hate God, and they will lie to the students. Mr. Dawkins there at Cambridge University, when asked by Bernie Siegel, where did life come from? He said, of course, it came from other planets. Of course, that's where it came from. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, Russell, you go right ahead. And certainly I share your concern about scientists. Certainly an honest scientist would say there's certain things we cannot confirm. We cannot confirm how old the Earth is because we just don't know. And we cannot say when the dinosaurs died out because, of course, nobody was there to confirm it. And you can't reproduce something when nobody was there. So go right ahead.
Well, and when you really get deep into science, as many years as I've been studying it, and as deep as I get into it, what I come away with is the mystery begins to appear. I've spent a long time studying the brain and how it functions, and neurons and how they function. Every day that I pick up a journal, they're finding new ways that cells communicate internally. And there's literally thousands of things in there that are operational, and they have to be exact. They depend on each other, which negates the evolution, because they can't occur one at a time. They have to all be there at the same time, or it doesn't work. There's no purpose for it. So as you begin to really get into science, deep into it, you begin to see the mystery of creation, and you begin to see God's hand in things. The problem with the scientists, and as Dawkins admits, even if God exists and you proved it, I wouldn't want to believe in it. So it's not that I can't make a good case for creation. It's that he doesn't want to believe it, even if he saw God himself and God told him, I'm here. He doesn't want him. And the reason they don't want him is because belief in God puts limitations on your behavior. It says, these are things you shouldn't do. These are things you should do. Well, nothing upsets them more than to be told there's things that they do that's wrong. And in interviews with many of these scientists who are really vicious in attacks on religion, admit that. They don't like religion because it limits their behavior. And what we consider sinful behavior is what they enjoy most, and therefore they don't want the idea that a God says that's sinful and you shouldn't do it. That upsets
them. Hold that thought, and we'll be right back here. And this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking to Russell about why scientists reject logic. Well, if they reject logic, because they don't want to accept God. I mean, after all, if you look at everything, everything is in perfect order. It didn't just happen by accident. There had to be some sort of design, but they don't want to accept that. Because, of course, if you accept God, then there is there's certain laws or absolute truth. There are things that you should not be doing. And so many of these people are totally immoral. They call themselves scientists, but they're really immoral people. They know very well that what they're teaching is a lie, but it's all a rejection of God. And really, this is one of so much of what's going on in the world today. There are no absolutes. There's no right. There's no wrong. Man can do whatever he wants to. Well, look and see what's happening to our society today. When we have man doing whatever we want to, when you have a Christian society where people are answerable to God, they act responsibly. When you have a society where they're not responsible to God, then why not cheat and steal and murder and do all the terrible things going on today? And people say, what are we going to do about the increased crime? Well, maybe we ought to put God back in the school again. Oh, we couldn't do that. Violation of the law of separation of church and state. Ladies and gentlemen, they took God and prayer and the Bible and the Ten Commandments out of our society and out of our schools because they wanted to destroy our nation. They're doing a great job of it. Russell, you go right ahead.
Well, and you look back at the history of socialism, collectivism, the Illuminati. Their number one enemy was always religion. When you ask them, well, what is your chief enemy? What is your chief obstacle to success? Well, it's religion, because religion, as you so clearly pointed out, teaches an objective truth and where you go for that truth. Well, socialism is based on the fact that certain elites are the repositories of truth. And you go to the elites to find out what's true. And truth changes as their mind changes, as new elites take power. And then suddenly we have a new truth. Well, I always tell people that's like trying to play a football game, but every quarter we change all the rules. You make a touchdown and they say, well, oh, we changed the rules. Now that counts on our side. Well, nobody could play a football game if you're constantly changing the rules. But that's what they want to do. They say, well, you know, we've got new official cases in, so we change the rules, and now when you make a touchdown, I get the point. Now when you tackle somebody, actually, that's a violation. And as businessmen tell you, you can't operate in a socialist society because the rules are always changing. You never know when you're in violation. You never know when you're going to go to jail. You never know when your business is going to be taken over. The same for physicians. You don't know when you're considered a criminal by your government because you tried to help someone. It's like the physician who operated on the 70-year-old man for his cataracts. The guy can see now. He plays golf. He enjoys life. And they put the doctor in jail for 10 years because they said he abused a federally owned patient by giving him sight. That he didn't need that cataract surgery, that he could have gotten along well with a stick with a red tip on it and a dog, say an eye dog. There was no reason for him to get out of his house. Well, this is the cold-hearted nature of socialism. They like to sell themselves that they're the compassionate ones. But when you see socialism in action, it's cold-hearted and it's heartless because it tells this elderly person, you really don't need your life. It tells this person, well, your relative doesn't need to live. Well, this person with MS should die for the good of the country. This is the cold-hearted facts of socialism. And people believe the rhetoric that they use to sell the programs rather than the truth of what socialism does. I mean, it's been, for instance, in the National Health System of England, they showed just in one community, thousands of people die every year because of the socialist system, because of denying care, because of poor level of care. Now you multiply that for all of England, you're talking about 10, 20,000 people a year dying because of socialism. Well, that's pretty cruel. They would never sell it if you knew the truth of what socialism was going to produce. And that's what this health care bill does. When you look at it, I know what these things do. I've studied all the socialist systems in the world. And I can tell you this bill is going to be the responsible for the death of hundreds of thousands of people, if not more. And purposely so. It is very, very cold-hearted. And you read the words of the people who helped write this bill. They are as cold-hearted as anybody in the Nazi regime or in Stalinist Russia. Because they think they should decide who lives and who dies, whose grandmother is worthwhile and whose is not. And that's what the socialists do. They make these decisions, not you. You can't make that decision.
Well, you know, it's so difficult for people to believe that anything could be this evil, but this is really what it is. And when you actually begin to analyze this and you go into the roots of socialism, you go back to Karl Marx, and we have a wonderful little book, Marx and Satanism. And you read what Karl Marx actually wrote. He wrote a number of poems about his satanic faith. Well, how could that be? I mean, certainly if that was true, why, we would know that. It would be taught in schools and universities. I mean, the idea of Marx being a Satanist, this is just ridiculous. The book was written by Reverend Wormbrand, who spent 14 years being tortured in a Romanian prison. And when he got out, he couldn't figure out why. Why would they want to treat him so badly? And he began to study Karl Marx. Karl Marx was a Satanist. And this whole thing, this whole socialist scheme, is founded in a revolt against God and a hatred of mankind. And when you understand that, why, it all makes sense. Suddenly, they can't tell you what they really want. They've got to tell you about compassion. They've got to tell you about they want health care for every American. They really don't. They really want to destroy our society. They want to kill off the elderly. They want to withhold care for people that they feel that lives are not worth living. I had the aortic valve replacement when I was 79. I would be dead by now if I hadn't had that replacement. But, of course, under the new system, I would not be able to get it. And if a doctor were to do this for me, suddenly when I paid him, that doctor could go to prison. This is what we're really facing here in America. And we're going to be forcing our people to go to other countries to get health care, just as today so many people in Canada have to come to the United States to get the health care and the reconstructive procedures and the other things they need. Socialism is a sincere, benevolent, idealist concept, but it doesn't work without force, and somebody's going to be in charge and determine who lives and who dies. But as the professor of orthopedics at Edinburgh University told me when I was in Scotland many years ago and asking him how the socialist system worked, he said, well, we have two lists. One is for the average people. We have an emergency list and an elective list. If you have an emergency, we'll put you in the hospital. If you're on the elective list, we never get to you unless you are a commissar, and that was the word he used, commissar, a government employee, and then, of course, we are forced to take you and get the elective surgery. Ladies and gentlemen, this is how it really works, and this is how it works in America. And what are the American people going to do? Are they going to sit back and say, well, I don't want to be involved because, after all, I could become controversial. I might come under pressure. Maybe the government would know that I oppose them. Or maybe... are there enough people who really value freedom that we can preserve this nation for generations unborn? Go ahead, Russell.
Yeah, and another story I read in one of the books on Obamacare, and it was about one of the parliamentary members in Quebec who went to the United States to one of our best clinics to have his heart valve replaced as well. And they asked him, so, well, why did you go to the United States? You're supposed to be promoting Canadian health care as the greatest in the world. And he said, well, it's my heart, and I want to take care of myself. They don't live. These politicians making these decisions don't have any illusions about what they're creating or what it's going to do. The only reason Congress agreed to pass this bill was because it was assured, well, you're not going to come under it. You're going to have your own health care system, and you'll get to see the best doctors the United States can provide in special clinics, and you won't have to wait. These rules won't apply to you. Well, that was the only reason they agreed to do it. Now, if we wanted to stop this bill dead in its tracks, what we should have done is said this bill cannot be passed unless all of Congress is included as ordinary people. I guarantee you it wouldn't have lasted one day. It had been voted down immediately because they always exclude themselves. That's what they did with Social Security. These things are absolutely incredible. When you start tearing away all these false layers that they present to the media, and the media presents to the mass of the people about, oh, this is all about compassion, oh, this is all about fighting racism, oh, this is about poor little kids who don't have health care. They know that's a lie. They're not deceived. They know very well that they have to sell this, just like a carnival barker, to get you to buy it. And once you buy it, then you'll find out, just like Nancy Pelosi said, now you'll find out what it really is. Well, it's too late then. I mean, read the history of National Health Service in England. It was a horrible disaster for almost its entire history. And now they're just in a quandary of, well, should we turn it over to the private health care? It's just costing so much money. People are dying regularly. There's so much dissatisfaction. The quality's horrible. The hospitals are ancient. Medical progress is just almost halted in these countries.
Well, of course, in England, I think more and more people are allowed to buy their own health insurance over there. If you've got money, you can buy your health insurance. The thing is that you're not going to be able to buy your health insurance here in the United States. That's the difference.
That's right.
And at least in England, you know, after it was such a catastrophe, and the people were just so furious with this, the lies had been told, that they were allowed to buy their own health care. I know Steve DeVos, I think that's his name. Anyway, he's the fellow from Amway, and he wanted to get a new heart. Certainly, he didn't want to wait on a list here in the United States. He went over to England, where they have the private hospitals, and you'd never guess. As soon as he walked in the front door, the heart suddenly came in, and he got a new heart. And he said, well, of course, I didn't get any special consideration. Anybody believes that? Got to be incredibly naive. When you got millions of dollars, you get all sorts of special consideration, whether it's certainly over there in Great Britain. But here in the United States, you're not even going to be able to buy that sort of thing under this new system.
Well, you see, all through Europe and Canada, they knew that the system would collapse if they didn't open it up to a two-tier private and national health service. That was the only reason it survived at all, because it was going to die, and the people were going to revolt. But because the people behind this want this to be absolute, no escape, it's going to be the worst example of national health care anywhere in the world, except maybe the Soviet Union. And if you read the Soviet system, it was unbelievable. They purposely killed people in their system to get rid of them. You know, one of the stories I read about the Soviet system, a doctor that visited it, said that in the clinic they put the EEG machine on the very top floor of the hospital, and the elevator never worked. So the heart patients had to walk up, you know, seven flights of stairs. Well, a lot of them died on the way up, and they did it on purpose. Well, I heard the same thing in Canada, that half the time the elevators don't work in the hospitals. So, you know, they create this illusion to sell it, and they've sold the United States the worst, most oppressive, dictatorial system that is going to usher socialism at all levels of the United States. This bill is not just about health care. It's about the total socialization of America. And it's going to create a police state situation. Because, like I said, according to the health bill, designing the community's health care comes under the purvey of the federal government. So it tells how you're to design your community, how you're going to design your housing, who's going to live where. And it's school clinics. It has whole sections that are just brainwashing the children about different aspects of their health care and their mental health. You know, people just have no conception how draconian this bill is, how oppressive it is.
Well, all we can do is try to get people to understand that they're going to phase this in very, very slowly, as we mentioned earlier, and so that, you know, certainly Obama will probably be out of office before this has been passed. But, you know, it's really being implemented about 2014. But understand, this is part of a much larger effort. It's about the destruction of America. There really are people who hate this country, who hate our Constitution, who hate freedom, and I believe Barack Obama is one of those people, I believe, but he is there because the people put him there, the Brotherhood of Darkness put him there, and they've allowed him to do this to our country. So it's not Obama, it's not the fact that he's a despicable individual, and there's a great deal we could talk about that is very about immorality. We won't get into that tonight, but it is the people who put him there that's really important. This will bankrupt America. America's already bankrupt. I suspect it's going to collapse financially within the next 10 years. Their Social Security will not exist unless, well, maybe they raise the retirement age to 75, and we could probably make the thing work. Medicare will not work unless we raise the retirement age to 75, and then they're not going to be able to get care after they're 75 because you're probably going to die anyway. All of these Ponzi schemes are going bankrupt. And the American people find it difficult. I mean, we don't want to give up Social Security. We don't want to give up the free health care we're getting here and when we're over 65 years of age. I mean, we're entitled to it, and people don't understand that free men aren't entitled to anything. And a government that can give you whatever you want has got to be able to take whatever you have. A government that can provide for you from cradle to grave has got to be able to control you from the cradle to the grave. And ladies and gentlemen, we're moving into a fascist society. Go right ahead, Russell.
Well, I think one of the worst forms of slavery is voluntary slavery. And that is when you give up your life, your rights, your honor, everything, to get a federal handout. And that's what Social Security is. I get this check. I'm going to get this check. Well, do you realize they stole your money all of your life with a promise they're going to pay it back to you? People, the situation I'm in, I'll never get a fraction of it. And people who paid hardly any into it are going to get a lot more than they paid into it. So, if you want to sell your soul and your freedom for a paltry handout that you could have made a lot more on your own, then I feel sorry for you. I think you've made a very poor decision.
Well, we're going to see entering very, very difficult times. The whole fabric of our economic system is beginning to come down, and certainly as we move into the next part of the recession, it's going to be far worse than it has been before. Knowledgeable people will admit we're in a depression, and this is going to be far worse than anything we saw in the 1930s. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Russell, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, you know, one of the principles of revolutionary faith is that when you're going to change a country, first you have to destroy what exists. And that's what most of this is about. The crime wave, the drugs, the immigration, the bailouts, the inflation, all of that's about destroying the structures that exist. And then they could replace it with the revolutionary socialist system. So if you're wondering why they do all these destructive things, that's why. It's reproduced in every country in the world over and over, historically. Our only hope is to stand strong, use the nullification. Don't think this is politics as usual, because most people I talk to think, this is just policy. We get him out of office, we'll be okay. It's just like Stan said, he's being manipulated. He's not in charge here. So eventually we've got to get to the people who've been manipulating this thing from the very beginning and focus the light on them, that no one elected the CFR, no one elected Trilateral to rule our government. But that's what they're doing. They're not accountable and they're not electable. So they should be removed and taken out of the federal government. That would be a major step for our protection. The other thing, we've got to stop corporations and all these businesses from buying congressmen. They represent the states they came from, not corporations that are not even in their state. And we see too much of this. And these congressmen are not doing what's in the best interest of their state. They're doing what's in the best interest of the corporation that pays them the most money. Most of them are scoundrels, and they should be treated like scoundrels.
I agree with you. It's a tragic situation they're in, but, of course, basically behind this is this eternal spiritual value of the battle, and it's really going to be up to the American people. Do they value freedom? Well, certainly we have a voice here at Radio Liberty, and I know Russell has a voice on many programs now, and he's speaking out all across the nation. Russell Blaylock, thanks very much for being with you. It's always
you,
a pleasure. A great program tonight, and look forward to having you back in the not-too-distant future.
I appreciate it. God bless you.
God bless you, too. Good night. Okay, well, that was Dr. Russell Blaylock, and we do hope that you enjoyed his commentary, and you're going to have to get involved, ladies and gentlemen. There's nobody who's going to save this country. There's no cavalry coming over the hills. If the people don't care, then America we've known will become a remembrance of things past. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoyed our interview with Dr. Russell Blaylock. Let me just mention that Dr. Blaylock does have a product that is manufactured, and it's called Brain Health or Brain Lipid Health. And these very, very do help people as far as the metabolism, brain metabolism. And certainly we can't make a lot of claims for it, but I can tell you Dr. Blaylock has worked very well on this. Certainly, the telephone number is 1-800-SPECIAL. 1-800-SPECIAL. Let me suggest you go to our website, radioliberty.com, and you can simply just scroll down to a Brain Health, a Brain Lipid Health banner there, and click on it. It'll take you to their website, but it is an excellent product, and I certainly recommend it to you. And then, of course, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported, and if you're in a position to help us, we'd love to hear from you. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. And if you're not in a position to help, and I know many people are hurting, and I fear before long many more people are going to lose so much of what they have, why, of course, then please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. If you haven't yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. If you have not yet seen the DVD series, The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, because there is a secret mystery. There were secret societies when America was created, and it was created for a specific purpose, which most of the founders had no idea, but some of them knew exactly what it was about, because they were aligned with the mystery religions at that time. The Secret Mystery series, 3 professional DVDs, very well done, need to be watched over and over again, and you can get one of them or all of them together. And then, of course, we have my little pamphlet set, the 3 pamphlets called The Occult Hierarchy. We have a 4 DVD set called The Supernatural, and the book that goes with that is entitled The Beautiful Side of Evil. It's written by Joanna Michelson. We have a book and a 4 tape set, Satanic Crimes. You can get them together at a reduced price. You need to have this information. You need to understand that the Bilderbergers, of course, the book Satanic Crimes and the 4 tape set goes into the Bilderbergers. And the Bilderbergers, these people of great wealth who are into pedophilia, went, of course, over in Belgium. They had a march of 300,000 people wearing white to complain about this evil organization. Why not a mention in the controlled media here in the United States? Because these wicked and evil people are the people who control the wealth of the world. And then, of course, we have so much other information. We have, certainly, Alex Jones' excellent DVD, Endgame, goes into the Bilderbergers. That's Endgame, goes into, certainly, population control as well. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Let me mention, we are having an all-day conference here in the Aptos Seascape Golf Course on the 17th of October, about 6 weeks from now. We do hope that you can come. The 17th of October, we're serving lunch. You're going to have reservations. We're bringing in speakers from all over the country. Great speakers are going to be here. It's going to be a great time. We have people who come back every year, and some of them come from across the country. So if you can make it, we'd love to see you. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. And so give us a call if you could make it, and bring your friends. Try to get them to understand what's going on. We need to get people involved in this battle. Remember, they're going to be giving you a smart meter so that they can actually determine how much electricity you use at any time. Or if you're not using electricity, maybe you're not home, that would mean that they could get into your home. Oh, well, they wouldn't do that. I'm reading a book now called FBI Secrets, written by an FBI agent who talks about how time after time they violated the Constitution and they went into people's homes without warrants. They don't believe in the Constitution. They don't believe in the law. They're above that. The book, FBI Secrets. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. If you don't have Barry Goldwater's, with no apologies, we offer secondhand copies. And, of course, we have our 4 tape set on The Secret Government, The Tragedy and Hope Special, the book Foundations, Their Power and Influence. You need to get this information. You need to help us to get out the truth. And then, please, pray for America. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.